Chapter 29. Yes, and how to save you, for I can save you. But every moment counts, and yet what I have to say is so dreadful. Nothing from your lips could seem dreadful. Ah, if he had had your way of speaking. Well, now at least you are free of him, said Tony, a little wildly. But at this, she stood up and bent a grave look on him. No, I am not free, she said. But you are, if you will do as I tell you. Tony, at this, felt a sudden dizziness. As though, from a mad flight through clouds and darkness, he had dropped to safety again, and the fall had stunned him. What am I to do? He said. Look away from me, or I can never tell you. He thought at first that this was a jest, but her eyes commanded him, and reluctantly he walked away, and leaned in the embrasure of the window. She stood in the middle of the room, and as soon as his back was turned she began to speak in a quick monotonous voice, as though she were reciting a lesson. You must know that the Marquess Zanipolo, though a great noble, is not a rich man. True, he has large estates, but he is a desperate spendthrift and gambler, and would sell his soul for a round sum of ready money. If you turn round I shall not go on. He wrangled horribly with my father over my dowry. He wanted me to have more than either of my sisters, though one married a procurator and the other a grandee of Spain. But my father is a gambler to owe such fortunes as are squandered over the arcade yonder. And so don't turn, I implore you. Oh, do you begin to see my meaning? She broke off sobbing, and it took all his strength to keep his eyes from her. Go on, he said. Will you not understand? Oh, I would say anything to save you. You don't know us Venetians, we're all to be bought for a price. It is not only the brides who are marketable, sometimes the husbands sell themselves too. And they think you rich, my father does, and the others I don't know why, unless you have shown your money too freely, and the English are all rich, are they not? And oh, do you understand? Oh, I can't bear your eyes. She dropped into a chair, her head on her arms, and Tony in a flash was at her side. My poor child, my poor Polixena, he cried, and wept and clasped her. You are rich, are you not? You would promise them a ransom? She persisted. To enable you to marry the Marquess? To enable you to escape from this place? Oh, I hope I may never see your face again. She fell to weeping once more, and he drew away, and paced the floor in a fever. Presently she sprang up with a fresh air of resolution, and pointed to a clock against the wall. Tea, the hour is nearly over. It is quite true that my father is gone to fetch his chaplain. Oh, I implore you, be warned by me. There is no other way of escape. And if I do as you say, you are safe. You are free. I stake my life on it. And you are married to that villain? But I shall have saved you. Tell me your name, that I may say it to myself when I am alone. My name is Anthony. But you must not marry that fellow. You forgive me, Anthony? You don't think too badly of me? I say you must not marry that fellow. She laid a trembling hand on his arm. Tea time presses, she adjured him, and I warn you there is no other way. For a moment he had a vision of his mother, sitting very upright, on a Sunday evening, reading Dr. Tillotson's sermons in the best parlor at Salem. Then he swung round on the girl, and caught both her hands in his. Why yes, there is, he cried, if you are willing. Polixena, let the priest come. She shrank back from him, white and radiant. Oh, hush, be silent, she said. I am no noble marquess, and have no great estates, he cried. My father is a plain India merchant in the colony of Massachusetts, but if you, hush, I say. I don't know what your long words mean. But I bless you, bless you, bless you on my knees. And she knelt before him, and fell to kissing his hands. He drew her up to his breast, and held her there. You are willing, Polixena? He said. No, no. She broke from him with outstretched hands. I am not willing. You mistake me. I must marry the Marquess, I tell you. On my money, he taunted her, and her burning blush rebuked him. Yes, on your money, she said sadly. Why? Because, much as you hate him, you hate me still more? She was silent. If you hate me, why do you sacrifice yourself for me? He persisted. You torture me. And I tell you the hour is past. Let it pass. I'll not accept your sacrifice. I will not lift a finger to help another man to marry you. Oh, madman, madman, she murmured. Tony, with crossed arms, faced her squarely, and she leaned against the wall a few feet off from him. Her breast throbbed under its lace and falbalas, and her eyes swam with terror and entreaty. Polixena, I love you, he cried. A blush swept over her throat and bosom, bathing her in light to the verge of her troubled brows. I love you, he repeated. And now she was on his breast again, and all their youth was in their lips. But her embrace was as fleeting as a bird's poise, and before he knew it, he clasped empty air, and half the room was between them. She was holding up a little coral charm and laughing. I took it from your fob, she said. It is of no value, is it? And I shall not get any of the money, you know. She continued to laugh strangely, and the rouge burned like fire in her ashen face. What are you talking of? He said. They never give me anything but the clothes I wear. And I shall never see you again, Anthony. She gave him a dreadful look. Oh, my poor boy, my poor love apostrophe, I love you, Polixena. He thought as he had turned lightheaded, and advanced to her with soothing words, but she held him quietly at arm's length, and as he gazed he read the truth in her face. He fell back from her, and a sob broke from him as he bowed his head on his hands. Only, for God's sake, have the money ready, or there may be foul play here, she said. As she spoke there was a great tramping of steps outside, and a burst of voices on the threshold. It is all a lie, she gasped out, about my marriage, and the Marquess, and the Ambassador, and the Senator, but not, oh, not about your danger in this place, or about my love, she breathed to him. And as the key rattled in the door she laid her lips on his brow. The key rattled, and the door swung open, but the black cassock gentleman who stepped in, though a priest indeed, was no votary of idolatrous rites, but that sound orthodox divine, the Reverend Ozias Mounce, looking very much perturbed at his surroundings, and very much on the alert for the Scarlet Woman. He was supported, to his evident relief, by the captain of the Hepzibah B, and the procession was closed by an escort of stern-looking fellows in cocked hats and small swords, who led between them Tony's late friends the Magnificos, now as sorry a looking company as the law ever landed in her net. The captain strode briskly into the room, uttering a grunt of satisfaction as he clapped eyes on Tony. So, Mr. Bracknell, said he, you have been seeing the carnival with this pack of mummers, have you? And this is where your pleasuring has landed you? H'm a pretty establishment, and a pretty lady at the head of it. He glanced about the apartment, and doffed his hat with mock ceremony to Polixena, who faced him like a princess. Why, my girl, said he, amicably, I think I saw you this morning in the square, on the arm of the pantaloon yonder, and as for that Captain Spaven, and he pointed a derisive finger at the Marquess, I've watched him drive his bullies trade under the arcade ever since I first dropped anchor in these waters. Well, well, he continued, his indignation subsiding, all's fair in carnival, I suppose, but this gentleman here is under sailing orders, and I fear we must break up your little party. At this Tony saw Count Rialto step forward, looking very small and explanatory, and uncovering obsequiously to the captain. I can assure you, sir, said the Count in his best English, that this incident is the result of an unfortunate misunderstanding, and if you will oblige us by dismissing these myrmidons, any of my friends here will be happy to offer satisfaction to Mr. Bracknell and his companions. Mr. Mounce shrank visibly at this, and the captain burst into a loud guffaw. Satisfaction? says he. Why, my cock, that's very handsome of you, considering the ropes at your throats. But we'll not take advantage of your generosity, for I fear Mr. Bracknell has already trespassed on it too long. You pack of galley slaves, you! He spluttered suddenly, decoying young innocence with that devil's bait of yours. His eye fell on Polixena, and his voice softened unaccountably. Ah, well, we must all see the carnival once, I suppose, he said. All's well that ends well, as the fellow says in the play. And now, if you please, Mr. Bracknell, if you will take the reverend gentleman's arm there, we'll bid adieu to our hospitable entertainers, and write about face for the exhibit. End of the Project Gutenberg, a text of The Descent of Man, and other stories by Edith Wharton. Mose by Gutenberg Edition.